How are you doing, Danny? Are you well? Are you strong?
I am good. You know, Phil, it's that reminder that as much as life has problems, if you really think about it, our lives are not that bad, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it really could be worse. Like, we could be on the big screen on the Jumbotron with our side chicks. Now we have to explain things because the side chick also happens to be your employee, you know what I mean? But nah.
And not just your employee, your HR manager, and you're the CEO. I'm sure there's been conversations about inappropriate relationships at work. In case you guys are wondering what we're talking about, it's been all over my timeline. This man is today's main character on Twitter. They were at a Coldplay concert, and the Coldplay Jumbotron decided to showcase, hey, let's show some couples in love. And the moment they realized that they were on the screen, immediately hid their faces. And to make it worse, listen to Chris Martin. Listen to this snitch. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Listen to what he says.
Oh, look at these two. All right, come on. You okay? Oh, what? Either they're having an affair or they're just very shy.
Turns out they were having an affair. Not very shy. The CEO of a company called Astronomer, his name's Andy, and his HR head named Kristen, both married to other people. And they just happened to appear on this Jumbotron at this monitor.
You know, shout out to them for not letting marriage stop them from finding the love of their lives.
Yay. Listen. I don't advocate for infidelity. In fact, so it's good that people are caught. But if you ever find yourself in an embarrassing situation, when you overreact, more people are inclined to look at it. If these guys had just stood there, stone, stoic, no change, that thing would have been on the screen on the Jumbotron for a few seconds. The only people that would have been seen it, or that would have seen it, are the people that are in the stadium. Someone could have said, wait, that looks like, but you easily deny it. Hey, no one else is going to be posting videos of that on their social media.
Do you know what kills me?
Deny, gaslight.
Reaction where they're in a VIP box, they cuddled up, they've got a homie with them who also apparently also works at the company. And then the camera pans to them. Mistake one, my man, instead of playing it cool as Dan says or hiding his face behind the woman, would have been very easy to do, my man ducks for cover like John Wick is shooting rounds from across the stadium. Simultaneously, this woman does a spin and turn like she's trying not to get ID'd as a murder suspect.
Like, do you think your spouse is at home just like watching Jumbotron footage on YouTube or something? It would have never come out.
Do you know, there's a thing called the law of attraction, Dan. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
What you fear most is what actually will happen.
Ooh,
$1 million. Feared.
Ooh, $1 million. Video, ooh, stay away from me. Ooh.
They feared that this video would be shared far and wide and they would be caught. And their reaction guaranteed that result. So well done.
You see, if it had been a simple, hey, a little bit of a wave, maybe stop holding. You know, like because he's holding her from behind. Then you notice the camera. Just casually, calmly stop holding her, wave your hand. You have plausible deniability. No, babes. You know, she was from work. She almost fell. I grabbed on her so that she wouldn't fall. Yeah, I'm sorry. I know I told you I'd be working late. It's because I knew you didn't want me to go to Coldplay. I went to Coldplay. I'm really sorry about that. Now you're navigating a big fight as opposed to a guaranteed divorce. You know what I'm saying? Come on, man. You got to think about these things. Yeah. Yeah.
But alas.
Alas. Anyway. Phil, how are you doing? How's your week been?
It's been a bit tough. I mean, might as well get to it. I think pretty much since the pandemic, I've been a little down, a little struggly. Things have come to a head in the past few months. My health has taken a dip. My mental health has taken a dip. I've been dealing with a lot of things. So it's been hard to stay afloat, Dan, you know. Weirdly enough, I was trying to take some bed rest and I was listening to The Read. Kid Fury seems to be going through it as well. So, you know, me and Kid Fury, get.
Yeah, look, you know what I mean? Mercury is in retroactive right now.
Don't you dare use that, okay? Barbs will pop up out of nowhere and just start attacking us.
We'll get to it. Look, Phil, ball up top. You know what I'm saying? We move.
Yeah, that's I'm too beat up for that. I need a break. I just need a hug. You know.
Mm-mm. Ball up top, Phil. Ball up top. Chin up. Mm. Allow yourself 30 to 45 minutes to cry thoroughly. Set an alarm. Dust yourself off. We keep it moving. It's called time management, Linda. And other such motivational speeches like that. I should have become a coach, you know?
Wait, Dan, I've got a question.
Yeah.
Are you familiar? Sorry. As I was just scrolling through the timeline, I just saw something. And you know, I've got ADHD. I just found this fascinating. Are you familiar with Dr. Musa?
Yes.
So I'm seeing a tweet here. It says, Dr. Musa Mtombeni has graduated with a master's degree in medicine. So I am confusion.
So now he really is a doctor.
No, he's not. He still has 4 more years.
Other than he just what did he graduate with?
It says doctor has gotten a master's in medicine.
Oh, master.
What was he a doctor of before? Was he not a doctor of medicine?
maybe he's like a doctor of sociology or something.
No, I believe he had a medical practice. I'm so confused.
Did you see his post about his wife a couple of weeks ago?
No, I missed that one. What did he say?
So he basically posted it. You know how he stays. I think he's married to Liesl, right? Beautiful woman. And he's always posting like corny stuff about his wife and stuff like that. And some people are like, oh, cute. But then, you know, the haters, the real haters, Anna Dan, are like, sorry, I'm really trying to do this. Kiss teeth. Well, I was vindicated, like that dude who's always checking for Dexter. See, what he did was he made a post of his wife as it was like a missing poster, and he phrased it like, let me actually pull it up exactly so I don't misquote it. He says his wife is a radio TV host, right? Yeah. So he put up this post, and it's supposed to be like, you know, someone missing, someone's being kidnapped, that kind of poster. And he posts, missing you so much.
Mm.
And then he, you know, he tied it into General Mkwananzi's thing about crime and missing women and so on. And people were upset. Like, bro, you can't use people's real life experience of, you know, people being kidnapped, abused, even killed, and use that as a cutesy way to tell your wife you're missing her. I mean, you can, just not in public. Do it between the two of you because you understand the context. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, my hater self felt vindicated. Also, this is a joke. I've realized I've made this joke a couple of times now to people that I'm a hater. I'm not really a hater. I actually love seeing love. Phil, let's actually start the show. This one is going to be a condensed episode full of packed information. We have to do some apologies. So before we get into it, I have to ask, are y'all
good to go?
Are y'all
good to go?
Sound a big thing, them.
Let me hear a drum play.
Welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast. This is Two Broke Twimbles. My name's Danny That Guy, aka Danos the Mad Titan, aka Denford Wekumaraini, aka Dinimbi, my life, your entertainment, aka stop asking about Jeffrey Epstein. That Epstein guy, he's boring, man. He's boring. He's been dead for a long time. It's a hoax done by Bill Clinton. Good to go. AKA Akuna Mumendi Danmu. Good
to go. That's right. Easy with the only unmistakable, the irrefutable, the staying warm this winter. Bull Phil, Charlie Gifflin, Phil, the Big Boss, Baby Gifflin, Zappi, Sexington Global, Filthy Phil, DJ Mukaradi, and of course, Shimri, Tengereo, Vitamin B.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You know what? I made this reference to Jeffrey Epstein, and I just want to say...
Your homie Jeffers?
It is... I completely understand the serious repercussions and all that, But at the same time, it is also quite hilarious to watch America fall apart. Yo, it is fascinating. It is like watching the messiest reality show you can think of. I can't believe some of the things that Trump is getting away with. And now it feels like he's not going to get away with nothing more. So this is very interesting. But I shall say no more because, you know, the U.S. Embassy just announced this week that your social media is going to be considered if you ever want to get a visa. And look, maybe I'm going to want a visa sometime. I don't know. What if there's an opportunity? I don't know.
They said social media. They said nothing about broadcasts. Just a heads up.
Phil, these things get clipped. And, you know, there's also context and understanding and so on. Anyway,
so for the avoidance of doubt, let's do this. We'd like everyone to know that we do not question any government's decision, whether local or abroad. We believe what they say to be absolute fact and no deception, malfeasance, or treachery was afoot.
Okay.
This podcast is nothing but the musings of characters that purport to be us. That's why we give you the AKs in the beginning of the show. Because it's not actually us. It is our parallel dimension selves.
This is Denford Wekumaraini speaking. I actually don't know that guy.
Exactly. So whatever you hear from this moment forward, and in fact, previous episodes, if it crosses the 30-second mark, it's not us. It's the characters. We are acting. This is, in fact, a drama. This is not even a podcast. It's an audio drama. Much like War of the Worlds or the BBC programming. This is a drama.
Doctor Who.
This is a character. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Although, Phil, what if, because America is home of the free and land of the brave, they actually expect you to question government and question the president, because that's the only way that you do qualify to be able to get in. And this is like a reverse psychology psyop.
If that is indeed the case, then we'll make sure that we get to customs as the characters, not ourselves.
Anyway, America.
4D chess over here, buddy. 4D chess.
Hilarious over here. Do you know what I want? I want the guys who said, no, you guys don't get it. Trump is playing 4D chess. He understands what's going on. You guys think he's dumb. No one can be that dumb and become president. I want you guys to come outside because I want to hear what you think now. That's what I want. Anyway, by the way, that's not me saying anything about Trump. I just want to hear what people's opinions are. You know what I'm saying? Sir or madam. but look, let's start off the show by celebrating some Africans doing big things, specifically Zimbabweans doing big things. So I'm going to mention a couple of dope things to note. Huge shout out to Kuda Rice, poet. We have interviewed him a couple of times, Phil, at the NAMA Awards, I think.
Yeah, I've linked with him. I actually bumped into him the other day around town. What's he up to?
Well, he created a short film. He was the writer and co-producer of a short film that was called, hold on, yeah, Chikwama. And that film has been selected to premiere at the Creative Africa Nexus program during the Intra-African Trade Fair Summit. And it has been shortlisted to be showcased at this, it's called the Canix Shorts Competition, which is a pretty big deal. So a huge shout out to Kuda Rice and his team for putting together this film, Chikwama. I hope it does well. Director was Takudzwa Ishmael Mboma. 2-minute visual piece.
Nice.
2-minute visual piece, and hopefully it will really do well at the Canix IATF 2025 Summit, showcased on the African continent. And maybe it will lead to bigger things for this collaboration over here. While we're on it as well, let's celebrate a Zimbabwean doing big things in sport. Who's the fastest man in the world right now, Phil? Who would you say?
I would say Noah Lyles.
I would say Lyles. Yeah, I would say so as well. Noah Lyles. But
Simbine is up there. Simbine is up there.
Who?
Simbine.
I don't know who that is. Who's that?
The South African. Yeah, I think he finished second in the IAAF. And then there's also the guy from Botswana.
Teboho.
Yeah, Teboho's from Botswana, yeah.
Yeah. So,
they've been swapping positions on the IAAF tour because the Diamond League is ongoing as we speak.
That's exactly what I was going to reference. The Wanda Diamond League going on in Monaco. Last week was the big 200 meters race. The number one winner was Noah Lyles. He had a time of 200 meters in 19 seconds and Sorry, Phil. I told you, this laptop is dying.
Oh, wow. You were so fast, it crashed your laptop? Wow.
No, Lyles. He had a time of 19 seconds and 88 centiseconds? 19.88 seconds, all right.
You mean milliseconds?
Milliseconds would be 880 milliseconds, all right. Milliseconds means thousandths of a second. I've seen people say it's wrong. It would be 880 milliseconds.
Then
19.88 is not 88 milliseconds. I'm willing to fight. Let's go. Who wants to go? Put the facts on the table. What are milliseconds?
How many centiliters have you ever measured in your life?
I know we may not use the phrase very often, centi. The correct phrasing should then be 19 seconds and 880 milliseconds. How many milliseconds in a second, Phil?
How many milliseconds in a second? 1,000?
Yes. So if it's 19.88, how many milliseconds is that?
But you're carrying it to the second decimal point. That's how you say 0.88.
I get it. So 19.88, how many milliseconds is that?
880.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
You're such a weirdo.
Nothing weird here. 19.88 seconds for Noah Lyles.
You sound like those Americans. Like, yeah, I've got $5,500.
Coming in at number two was Teboho with Letsile Teboho with 19.97. And at number three was Zimbabwe's very own Makanaka Ishe Charamba, who came in at 19.99. So just 20 milliseconds, 0.02 ahead of, or rather behind Letsile Teboho. So, you know, just one slightly better step. And he was coming in at number two. Yeah, huge shout out.
But it's actually impressive. And I'm seeing a lot of professional commentators talking about Charamba. Especially like Justin Gatlin, and I forget his co-host on his podcast, and they're like, yo, this dude is huge. Like, considering how fast he is, considering how big he is, it is actually impressive.
Shout out to him, man, because he has this huge race, Diamond League. Who's the fastest man in the world? He came in third behind Noah Lyles and Letsile Teboho.
And you know what the wild thing is? On Monday, he has to go back to class.
How old is he?
He's in university.
Oh. Shout out to you, my guy. I hope by now you're getting mad sponsorships and stuff. Although maybe his surname might cause problems. But anyway, that's another story for another.
Who would be sponsoring him? Who would be sponsoring him? Let's be honest. Where are the sponsorships coming? Unless Scott. Scott.
I don't know if you saw, but Scott, a couple of weeks ago, he seemed to be interested in recruiting. Hey, okay, let me not even, because this was obviously nonsense. Neymar. Finally celebrating Zimbabweans doing big things. If you don't get it, forget about it. It's okay. It's okay. Just leave it. Just leave it.
No, okay, I'm not laughing. Okay, I am laughing, but
anyway,
also, like, the visual is killing me, bruh. Can you imagine, like what would Neymar be like playing in the PSL?
Finally.
Can you imagine?
Huge shout out.
Neymar at Bumblefields.
No, it obviously Neymar wasn't serious. Neymar versus Kepe.
Dude, the whole team would just be there with their notebooks. Neymar, design it.
The stadiums would be sold out. I mean, and you'd be earning a crazy salary, I'm sure. But I think even Scott might run out quick with the amount of money that would be needed to pay this man per week. Finally, huge shout out to the Zimbabwe Sables, the Zimbabwe's rugby team, who are currently competing in the Rugby Africa Cup. Last Saturday, they staged a second half comeback to beat Kenya 29-23 to book a spot in the finals against Namibia. The finals against Namibia will be coming soon, and if they win, they qualify for the World Cup. So that will be very interesting to watch. I don't know all the breakdowns of the I don't know what needs to happen for who to be in what, but I know
if
that.
If only we had a group with people that are following this closely who would give us insight.
I mean, I saw people talking about it and I was like, dope. This, oh, by the way, we got a lot of these as Marvin's doing it big, or some of them at least from our Patreon group. A huge shout out. Huge shout out to a relative, Christopher, about the Charamba story. And I think he was also the one who was really pushing the narrative about, I think he was watching the games live. And I was like, man, don't you have a, I know you have a job because we work together sometimes. Anyway. Yeah, huge shout out to Zimbabwe Sables. Okay, housework done, Philip. I think we need to address the audience, our listeners. So yeah, apologies for not being around the last week and last 2 weeks, shall we say. Last time we were here, it was together with, was it not together with Tinto? Did we do another episode after Tinto? We didn't, right?
When was the episode we did where I had no power? You know, that was before, I think. Yeah. So Tinto was the last episode.
Yeah. So, hey, if you missed us, I hope you were able to head on over to the Feeling Station and hear our collaboration episode, even though Phil's part was deleted. I don't know if it will still come out.
Mysteriously. Like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. I did not know that would happen.
I want you guys to know that both Phil and I told stories on Tinto's podcast, breakup stories, right? And I think Phil got cold feet.
I was actually, because what I did was I then, you know, contacted interested parties and like just a heads up. And they were like, Madhav, if you don't
stand on business, Phil.
From the interwebs,
release the Phil cut, Tinto. Release the Phil cut. Because I had to deal with the blowout and the fallout from my episode.
What fallout did you deal with?
People hit me up. Some people even mentioned how trash a person I was. And I was like, guys. I ain't gonna give a disclaimer at the beginning of the episode. Why are we judging? Just because you know who it is. Anyway. I wouldn't go so far as to say I received hate mail, but some people felt it was important to let me know that I was a trash person.
Yeah, just number one.
Anyway,
thank you for taking a bullet, Dan. Appreciate it.
Nah, it's all good. I mean, you know, sometimes you must just accept that, you know, we all grow. Growth.
No, I have no problem sharing the guans. If I lived in a vacuum, right, where I could share these guans without it having real world implications, you know, I'm an open book.
Phil.
I just worry about the other people involved.
Yeah, but, you know, they must tell their stories. You have your story to tell.
There's also some stories I don't ever want to share because, like, some of those individuals, I fear them. They're like Candyman. I don't want to mention their names because then they'll appear. You know, you don't want to utter the names of demons.
So listen, if you haven't had a chance, please go listen to the Power of Feelings episode.
The best episode ever. That's what it's called.
Midweek drop. Myself and Phil were on it, but you'll only hear my story. Unless you guys start an online campaign to release the Phil cut. Because the audio is there. I'm just saying.
It's been deleted from Tinto's address.
Phil, we've got a couple of talking points to talk about, but... you know, there's a couple of things I came across this week, and I always save them to discuss on the podcast. They're not necessarily things that happened, but it's just a place for me to vent and express my thoughts and frustrations. So I'm going to start with them, if you don't mind. Very brief issues here. So the first one is, I came across a tweet where...
This is off to a bad start.
Someone was explaining their frustration and consternation at Gen Z. And then it ignited an online debate. So let me read the tweet for you, and then I'll share some thoughts about the debate, and then I have my own thoughts on there. So this person says, I'm a recruiter, so I do a ton of phone interviews. And something I've noticed about Gen Z specifically is that a lot of them answer the phone and don't say anything. Like, I can hear their breathing and the background noise, but they wait for you to say hello first. Okay, a little bit innocuous, but weird. Yeah. And I mean... That's weird. Like, if someone phones you, what do? You answer with hello.
I know exactly why they're doing that. Carry on, I'll explain.
So, Gen Z, this tweet actually went mini viral. It I think it has like 250,000 likes and 21 million views or something like that. So someone says, Okay, so people are now commenting on all the quotes and replies where people keep saying, no, you called me, you want to speak to me, so you say hello first. And I feel like, hold on. I always took this for granted. I've never even thought about it. It's just what happens. When you answer the phone, you say hello, and the other person starts speaking. If you get called, you answer by saying hello. But for many people in Gen Z, they strongly feel and strongly believe, no, you phone me. So if you want to speak to me, start with by saying what it is that you want to say. You say hello. In fact, some people were even saying, why is hello even part of this? So anyway, go on. You're saying you know why this is a thing.
Yeah, I was going to say that. But also, this generation has grown up knowing they get more spam calls than actual calls.
Yeah.
So to them, calls are a source of anxiety, stress, or danger. So even me, sometimes when I get a phone call from a number I don't recognize, especially in this day of people like people dubbing your voice or whatever. Granted, right now it's kind of de minimis because my voice is online. So if someone wanted to impersonate me, they've got a massive war chest to choose from. We really shouldn't have started a podcast. Anyway.
I was thinking about that as well. And worse off, I've restarted a radio show.
So I can totally understand if you're calling someone, especially without notice, saying, hey, what's up? However, if you share your phone number with someone, expect a phone call. So I think it's such a small thing though. Like, it's not like the CV was badly formatted. It's not like they haven't done the work to do their qualifications. It's literally a small piece of phone etiquette, but cultural mores and norms evolve. If this is, and if you've noticed this is a thing across the whole age group, then accept that. It might be a frustration, but I think you can understand that things are moving. It's the same way irregardless became a word. Irregardless is not a word, but it's not a word.
I get that. Okay. But I think we can still also debate the pro. As much as culture is evolving, we can debate whether it's a good thing or not. So, this is obviously a minor thing. It's not such a big deal, like Phil says. But if we think about it, back in our day, young man, when we were young whippersnappers, the idea behind saying hello was essentially, I've now connected to the call. We can begin the conversation. So ring, ring, hello. Hello, my name is da-da-da. I'm calling you about this. Oh, yes, of course, blah, blah, blah. And we continue. This is in the context of a job interview. So the idea is we're doing phone interviews, i.e. we've reached out to you. We've let you know that there's an interview happening at this time. Then the phone rings. So surely you're expecting a phone call. So I completely understand the spam situation. And that's something that we never grew up with. And by the way, I'm so grateful that in Zimbabwe, it's not a problem, because whenever I spend any amount of time in Joburg or even any parts of the world, I quickly find myself losing my mind. Losing my absolute mind. Like, how is this legal? It's just ring after ring after ring after ring. Anyway, you've set a specific time. You've given the person your number. It's now 11 o'clock. You know it's time for my phone interview with this workplace. So you don't expect it to be spam. So this is more a case of, we expect that this is the normal way that phone calls happen. I.e., you phoned, you say hello. And I'm like, yo, that's crazy. Because I suppose the function of the hello was, you didn't have a screen when you used to make phone calls, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the hello was an audible way of showing that the phone has connected. Because you could hear the ring, ring, ringing. If the ringing stops, maybe the person's connected or the call is dropped or whatever. But the hello means the person is there. That's not a thing anymore, right? Because, I mean, you can see the phone calling. You can see if it's connected. You can see the seconds counting. But still, I still think that's crazy. I still think that it's insane that there's a whole generation of people. So, you know, I was just looking at the comments in here, and there were so many people in Gen Z that were saying no, but it completely makes sense. Anyway, I just thought I would mention that. I thought it was fascinating. And I meant to, before the podcast, reach out to a couple of Gen Z people. I didn't have any.
Dan, I think for the safety of all parties involved.
No, like, for example, I was going
to
ask.
At your old age, why are you reaching out to the youth?
No, so for example, I asked my wife to ask her young sister, like, hey, what do you do? And then she said, if it's a number I don't know, I don't say anything. But if it's a number I know, I say hello.
See?
So,
to be fair,
To be fair, that happens to me too. Like, I do that too sometimes.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Second thing that I came across this week that I thought was, I was like, nope, I have to save this because I don't have an immediate answer. And we have to talk about this on the podcast. Someone asks, and I thought it was a very valid question. What is the protocol when someone knocks on your bathroom stall? Now, take a moment to think about it. Because it sounds like it's an obvious thing, but I don't think it is.
The protocol is, you say present.
You're in a public place. What are you looking for, baby? That's very helpful. Thank you.
ask your wife. Ask your wife what she'd do.
Okay, babes. You're in a public place. You're public, a public place where you use a bathroom. As you're doing your business in the bathroom, someone knocks on your stall. How do you respond? She said, occupy.
I would have expected to say, suka wena. No,
who say? There's someone. Well, anyway, I find that also very interesting because what are you supposed to say?
You say present.
Present or come in. The water's lovely.
Come in, I've warmed the seat for you.
I'm going to give you guys an answer because if ever you do face this very difficult situation, you might panic, you might struggle, you might think all kinds of things.
Why would you panic?
It's because it's a weird... Phil, you're at your most vulnerable.
But it's a toilet.
There's a few times when you feel more vulnerable.
It depends. Have I had the curry? If I've had the curry, then yes, I'd be worried.
You could say this is my own private domicile and I will not be harassed. That's what you can say.
Okay, we really are struggling for talking points. Or you can
say, yes, come in. I've been expecting you. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention that as well. I thought it was funny. Cool. Okay, those are the two things I wanted to mention, Phil. We have a ton of talking points. I feel like we don't have to talk about all of them. Where would you like to start?
Should we start at home or should we start abroad?
Let's start at home, Phil. Charity begins at the church.
Charity shop.
Yes.
You brought up Holy Tennis. Apologize. Oh, yeah, you don't talk about Winkity. Let's start with the Winkity. Because you were fascinated with this guy, and I was confused why you're fascinated.
So here's the story. Winky D has a show that's coming up at Alex Sports Club next month, I believe. Or maybe it's at the end of this month. I can't remember the exact date. Let me just quickly look it up. He will be performing next month when he's dropping his album. He will have by the way, side note, every major Zim artist drops an album with the show. I find that interesting. Anyway. 30 August 2025, he's going to be having a show at Alex Sports Club when he also releases his album. But the way he announced this was he used a video of a well-known football journalist, Fabrizio Romano, known for speculating on transfers during the transfer season and reporting on football. And his trademark phrase, here we go, to indicate that a transfer is done before it has officially been announced. So if you want to hear what it sounds like, let me play it for you.
The Gaffa to Alex Sports Club. Here we go. The deal is done Saturday, 30th of August 2025 at Alex Sports Club. Stay tuned for more updates. And it's a here we go.
Okay. So there was speculation. Is this AI? Is it not real? No, it's actually real. Partly confirmed by Fabrizio Romano himself commenting in underneath the post saying it's a here we go. In reality, what it most likely was, I mean, I can't know for sure, but like 99%, it was a cameo. Cameo is a service where celebrities can be hired for a certain amount to say happy birthday or whatever it is, right? So it's pretty clear that Winky D's team reached out to Fabrizio Romano through Cameo. It costs as little as $140 to hire Fabrizio Romano to send you a custom message. It's not like a super produced message. He just uses a selfie camera of his phone and he'll record this video and send it through to you. The reason it was fascinating to me was, number one, I thought Fabrizio Romano was, like, I thought it would be more difficult to access him. I really thought Cameo was more for, I used to be a celebrity. I'm probably someone's favorite celebrity from 1994. So, you know, I still need to make money somehow so you can hire me to say happy birthday to your uncle or something. Or people who are kind of lesser known. I was in some TV show that was a cult classic back in 2003 or something. But I didn't realize that Fabrizio Romano, who regularly gets millions of impressions on his Twitter and his other social media by announcing these transfer speculations, I didn't realize that you could easily access him for $140, first of all. Second of all, I found it interesting that it was a strategy to announce his album launch and event. And I mean, I can't hate because it kind of trended because he did it. But it was fascinating to me. Why do you think it's not something fascinating, Phil?
Not necessarily. You're surprised about Cameo was what got to me. Because there are quite a few A and B listers on Cameo. Also because it's easy money. As you said, like it's anything from 100 to £300 per video. If I have an assistant processing these scripts, I can literally get a batch of 10 of these and get them done in 15 minutes. So I mean, that's $1,000 to $5,000 in 10 minutes free of charge. Also, as a reporter, Fabrizio Romano, I don't know him to be on any TV shows. Is he on TV?
I don't think so.
That being said, he'd struggle to find recurring revenue. So you'd break the stories to grow your social media following, and then you leverage social media following to get actual money. Because, like, for example, in American sports, Shams, who breaks all the NBA stories, because he's on ESPN and he's writing articles for ESPN, that's how he gets paid in bread and butter. And as a trade-off, ESPN lets you keep your social media, but you've got to put their name in your, excuse me, as part of your handle.
That's so crazy. Okay. I imagine that literally tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people are familiar with the name Fabrizio Romano.
Yes, but how do they pay for it?
Now,
because also, if that's the case, you're limited in how you can accept money.
Yeah, I hear you, but like it costs $140 to access. If I wanted to, like, I don't know. It's fascinating to me. And I guess it's really just the economics of Cameo.
But Dan, think about it, right? The people that are fascinated with Fabrizio Romano are not players, they're the fans.
Yes.
So now you've got to look at access point and price points, right? So for the most part, the people that would really appreciate a Fabrizio Romano video are football fans or their children. So the majority of these, I'm assuming, are parents like getting, or girlfriends or whatever, getting Fabrizio to say, happy birthday, Dan, blah, 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 you know what I mean? So if I'm Fabrizio, I'm on Cameo and it's £100 and I'm doing, as we just estimated, now that we brought it up, I just looked up his page. He's definitely not affiliated with any established media house right now.
Mm.
So if he is writing articles, he's writing op-eds or he's being commissioned, because even his contact email is his personal Gmail. It's not even a company domain of any sign.
Yeah.
So that being said, this is how he pays his bill. So if I line up 30 people a day.
That's crazy. Yo.
30 people a day to do cameos. That's $3,000.
So I just looked up who are the most expensive people on Cameo. Caitlyn Jenner is $2,500 per video. Kevin O'Leary is $1,500. Juicy J is $900. Michael Beasley, $1,000. Brian Cox, he's the guy who played, Succession, the dad in Succession.
Mm-hmm.
Logan Roy, $689. I mean, I guess I never really pictured what would be the economics of Cameo. It just feels like it only costs $140 to access Fabrizio Romano.
And that's what I'm saying, because if I'm Fabrizio Romano, I'm sure he probably tried a higher price point, but that's a great price point to be at, because you're guaranteeing that pretty much anyone who's a fan or a follower of you can afford a Cameo if they save up for it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Anyway, do you think it's a good tactic, good marketing tactic?
I mean, we're talking about it, so yeah.
It worked. Yeah, look, I mean, I'm all for trying something different, something new, get people talking. Yeah, I'm for it. I will say I was surprised.
I'm impressed with this, but there's so many new things I want Winky D to try, and promoting the album has never been the problem. It's everything after that that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear it. Okay. We're keeping it gaga. All right. Still keeping it local. H Metro today, actually. So let's say this week. had a front page article of Holy Ten apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
It was rather dramatic, the apologies, but long story short.
Who was the apology juicing to?
Everyone in general. You're saying, I'm sorry for my messy behavior. In fact, let me read the different things that it quotes.
This is my sorry for 2024, and I ain't going to mess up no more.
I'm sorry for being a hypocrite who messed up his name in the industry. I'm sorry for being a lunatic who was always provoking other influencers. I'm sorry I was such a reckless fellow, always generated negative headlines. I was non-professional, ill-mannered, and disorganized. I'm sorry for being disrespectful. I was stuck in my wild teenage behavior. I had a lot of anger issues, which I failed to control. Most importantly, I'm sorry for not saying Winky D is number one.
Wait, what? Did he say that?
I mean, that's the front page.
Did he say, I'm sorry for saying Winky D is not number one?
I mean, it doesn't have quote marks around it, but that's what the front page says.
I don't think that last quote happened, but okay.
That's what that's what's here.
They're taking the piss on that one.
It literally says Winky D is number one. I did not purchase an article. Okay, but here's what it says. Hip hop star Holy Tien says Winky D is not only the best musician, but he is also the best dressed artist in the country.
They're having a laugh, blood. They're having a laugh, aren't they?
Having a laugh, isn't it? Holy Tien says he is the second best musician in this country, with Winky D being the best musician. This was during a wide-ranging exclusive interview on ZTN with the Eric Andoro. Shout out to Erica. All the controversy that happened was fueled by social media. It wasn't even that deep. That kind of got worse. But honestly, he was the same when he was coming up. I introduced that man to my wife. Blah, 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 blah. As for my past actions, I apologize for how it made people feel. Not what I said, because I'm the leader of the youths and I speak the truth. Okay, so that's not really an apology. I'm an entertainer. I'm not a pastor. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an engineer.
But you are, he's not practicing, but he's a lawyer.
All the things I said about my wife at Ola's podcast was just a narrative, planned drama because there was an album coming out, but it ended up hurting the person that I love the most.
What? It almost sounds like there's someone with a podcast who said that this might be what he's doing. If any, do you remember who that might be, Dan?
We literally said that. Says, I regret most of the interviews that I have had because they contributed to the narratives that's out there right now that I'm a bad person or whatever everyone is saying. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, I don't care, man.
Yeah.
Did you listen to his new album?
Man, I don't care.
Yeah.
I was saving all the space in my brain for the Clips album. I don't like.
Let's get into it. Tell me about the Clips album, Phil. How did you enjoy it?
Close to, like, it's a whisker away from absolute perfection. A whisker away from absolute perfection. I was so excited for this album. Granted, it took a long time to get here because I was still up at midnight and I wanted to listen to it. And then it said, no, the album will only be available at 6 a.m. I was like, what? And then a couple of people were doing streams and I was like, you know, I don't want to listen to the album on a stream. I'll just wait for the thing. So I went to bed. Woke up first thing in the morning, put it on play. From Birds Don't Sing all the way through Absolute Perfection, man. What an amazing album.
What a way to start the album also, though. Like, Birds Don't Sing was...
And these guys are rapping. And one of the things I thought about while I was listening to it, I was like, I'm trying to remember a rapper that I've grown up with. So... my hip-hop awakening happened around 1999. I distinctly remember getting Grinding and Hell Hath No Fury from Spin Along in Mutare, in the Meekles, for $799. I remember it clear as day. I remember taking that to school. I remember falling in love with Bathing Ape because of the Clips. I remember buying my first Bape sneakers, my first Bape jacket. I remember the Re-Up Gang. I remember all of that, like, distinctly remember, like, my real appreciation and love for hip hop was coincided with the Clips. It would be a lie for me to say they were my favorite group, but they were definitely up there. Like, I enjoyed their music. I think I appreciate it now that I'm older because I get the references. And now
Malice took 15 years off. I am approaching damn near middle age. And these rappers are still making music that I anticipate, the way I would anticipate music when I was a kid. And I'm like, who else is still doing this for me? Like, which artists have grown up with us where we really can't wait to hear their new album? And I can't think of anyone.
I feel somewhat the same anticipation when I hear Nas is about to drop. Especially with the recent run that he's been having with the collaborations with Hit-Boy.
I think you're good with that. But then also, as displayed on this album, Nas is very inconsistent. Pusha has not shown me any signs of inconsistency since he's gone solo. He struggled with choosing the right songs or the right choruses, but his verses are always incredible.
Mm.
The Nas verse on this album, it's like, I was let down. I was like, I get it, but okay. It seems like he just wandered into the booth, you know what I mean? Like, he was drunk. And he's like, oh, you guys are recording? Okay, let's see what you got. Let's see what you got.
it was cool. It was fine.
Mm.
It was fine. And surprisingly, Tyler was dope.
Why is that surprising? Dude, Tyler's been on a tear. And Tyler has been, for years, has said, Pharrell and The Clips are one of his favorite producers / group. So this is his life. This is his life's dream. Like, I finally get to do a song with Clips. I am not wasting this. And he put his foot in that verse, yo. Huh? My nigga Push moving dirty white like mosh pits.
So what I mean by saying it was surprising, right? I think Tyler makes amazing music, but I never really considered him as a strong rapper. I just thought his music was dope because of the feel of it and the stories that he's telling. But I didn't consider him as like a super lyrical dude. But his verse was like dope. It was done like bars and entendres and what. I was like, yes, come through.
Mm.
Obviously, K-Dot. I keep hearing other songs on the album. Like obviously POV with Tyler and what's that? Fico and a couple other Fico songs. I hear them. And I'm like, oh, this might be my favorite. Then I hear Chains and Whips again. I'm like, yeah, no.
No, I think the chorus on POV is probably the best. Mike Tyson blow to the face is some of the best rapping, period. Oh my gosh, that song is insane. What do you think about earnings before interest, taxation, and amortization?
EBITDA. there's not a song on that album that I felt like I didn't like. Hold on, let me pull up the track list now.
Yeah, outside of Pharrell's whiny voice, the album was perfect.
Even then, I would say like it wasn't. It wasn't the preferred sound you would want, but it's not like it ruined the song or anything.
Mm. I would say the only weak, and it's not even a weak, but like my least favorite is probably the song with Dream. In terms of the chorus, but outside of that, I'm like, I love this project, and it's such an easy listen. It's a great listen, man. It's a dark album, though. Dark.
Yep. straight from track one. So this is interesting, right? Because obviously we have some people who are not hip hop heads, right? So who listen to this podcast and
Tabo,
and I thought I'll also like to share. I'm not as into hip hop as Phil, so I did like Clips from back in the day. By the way, I could never tell if it was The Clips or Clips until they did this interview recently.
They don't even know if it's The Clips or Clips.
Anyway, I didn't, like, obviously there were songs that are, you know, grinding and all that was dope, but I didn't really follow their career like that. And, you know, I just kind of, from a distance, knew about the fact that, oh, no, wait, Malice is not rapping anymore and stuff. Okay, cool. I kind of knew that from a distance, but I wasn't, like, paying that much attention. Obviously, I knew Push. He was always viewed as one of the Hall of Famers, the greats. But I came into this album like, oh, Clips are rapping again. I was quite surprised by the anticipation that the album had, because I was like, wait, have these guys really carried for the past 20 years or whatever it's been? Like, they've carried their fans. Because they haven't really been putting out music. Push has a little bit here and there, but Malice hasn't.
No, Push has had a solid solo career, but Push has had an incredible 7 year. He's got Fear of God 2, It's Almost Dry, Daytona, the two mixtapes. And so Push has got 6 solo projects, and then Malice has his 2 Christian projects, plus the collabs they did on the Kanye album, the Nigo album, and I'm trying to remember, there's a 3rd collab they did on someone else's album. I'm forgetting who it was. So they've been somewhat active. And obviously Push has been writing for Kanye and his guest appearances. So yeah.
So, I mean, so I came into it like, oh, they've got another album. And I was like, wait, everyone is so hyped and anticipated. I was like, oh, okay. And then when I heard it, obviously it was dope. And then I thought, let me play it for my, because my wife didn't even know. What is Eclipse? What is that?
What?
She had no idea. Never heard of Eclipse.
You're a hip-hop head wife.
That's what I said. I said, you can't be out here being a hip-hop head and you tell me you don't know Eclipse. Then when I mentioned Pusha T, she's like, okay, I know Pusha T. All right, okay, fine. Then we listened to the album and she was like, okay. So like, she really liked POV, for example, you know, added it to her own playlist. And the other stuff, she's like, I mean, it's dope, but you know, it's like, it's very man-ish. We sell drugs and we will kill you. I was like, all right, I understand. I get it. But like,
yeah, there's not that many drugs.
No, like, I mean, as the sound or style of it. But she really liked POV and like added it to her own personal playlist. And she's views like, that's my joint. I think that was the only one that she really, really fought. But the other, she was like, yeah, this is kind of dope. And, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Even someone who doesn't even know them or know the history or know the story had good reviews or good thoughts about the album. So I like it. I really like this album. It's definitely something that I'm going to be playing over and over again, which I think is rare for many albums I listened to recently. And we're going to go back to the same conversation we've always had when we were discussing, for example, Kendrick in the past and so on, which is, this is not played in the club type music. Although I would love to go to a club that plays this kind of music. This is not, kind of played in the background. In fact, I think there was an interview on, Fat Joe and Jadakiss podcast? When they mentioned that, listen, we've been in the game for so long. I actually don't want people to skim through this. I don't want you if you're not a lyrical analyst type of person. It's okay. Go listen to the other stuff. It's there. Go listen to the other stuff. It's fine. I only want people who, and when I heard that, I was like, for real though. Yeah, actually, it's cool. It's good that music exists, even though it's not going to be super commercially successful. But this album's been commercially successful.
This album also demands your attention. I think that's another thing. Like, it does have some good background music vibes, whatever, because Pharrell's production is incredible. But also, it demands your attention. Like, every time it draws me in, and every time it is, like, without exaggeration, I think I've listened to it probably 15 times since it dropped.
Yeah.
Every time I catch a new entendre. Every time I pick up on a new line, I'm like, oh, snap. Oh, what? Oh, God. Oh.
But something I will say about the clips, they are lyrical, but not complicated, if that makes sense. Like, it's not, you don't need to sit with a dictionary or.
Yes, you do.
Nah.
I've literally been seeing people reviewers speaking and saying, yo, I had no idea what a pirouette was. What's focaccia?
I feel pirouette. Come on, man. It literally opens a song with yellow diamonds look like pee-pee.
That's such an incredible opening line. Oh, that line is incredible.
I had to restart that song several times. I was like, what a bar, man. Because what?
Yo, and my nephew loves that line.
He's like, Uncle Phil, hey, your diamonds look like pee-pee. But anyway, my point is, unlike, for example, a Kendrick or a Nas, where there's a bit more complicatedness in the lyrics, These lyrics are very complicated.
I don't know what you're saying.
Okay, maybe I'm using the wrong words here. The lyrics are complex, but not complicated. They are deep, but not inaccessible. They are clean. It's clean, crisp, measured, accessible, understandable, but deep with entendres and double mean. That's kind of what I mean. It's like not, at least to me, that's how I see it. When I listen to a Kendrick, I sometimes sit and think like, I need to, what does this mean? This complex line that was tied in with the next line, which has the previous. Whereas with the clips, it's more like really dope lines that are cleanly delivered with deep meaning to them, sure, but they're not complicated or convoluted.
I kind of get what you're saying. I think, what's his name from Dissect Podcast? What's his name again? Cole Kushner.
Yes, yeah.
Cole Kushner wouldn't necessarily have to do a 20-part.
Yeah.
But he would still have to do a substantial amount. Like, this would be a 3-hour episode.
Like Genius has still got, it's got a little bit of work to do.
This is an incredible album. This is such a throwback. Like, it's such a great album. It reminded me of why I love hip hop so much. Like, this is just like, and this is also this GNX. I think even Tyler's last album, save for two songs. These are songs you can go front to back in the gym.
Mm. Yep. No and skips.
I love that. I love that. Like, and it just gets in that zone, gets you angry. It's like, you know what? Cry me no gonna shand them, dad. It's
so good.
You know? Sometimes you need motivational music. Even if you're going to your office job, you know? Just substitute your office job for the crack house.
What do you think about their rollout? Because it's gotten a lot of people talking about album rollouts now.
Incredible. I think it's a testament to their old school values, because what they're doing is like how albums used to be dropped back in the day. But I think it's obviously there's so many more platforms, and the fact that they're willing to do all those platforms and be engaged in all those interviews, I think that they might be nearing 20 interviews right now, like as they roll out this album, which is incredible. And DJ Z from Audio Mac, he was also saying like, this is a testament to what happens when you finish the album. Because keep in mind, right? We first heard Chains and Whips, for example, the version without Kendrick, almost 2 years ago now. So this album has been done for 2 years, the whole drama with Def Jam aside. And they were so happy with the project. They were like, we're not changing this. This is our quality work. We're going to stick by it, make sure this album drops. And that album's been turned in for quite some time. And now the thinking isn't, let's finish this music. It's now, okay, the music is done. How do we promote it? Which is a testament to them. And it's also a testament to the people that are around them, the people that are surrounding them, and the respect that they have. Because a lot of people had this album, or parts of this album, for as long as a year. And not a lot of stuff leaked until like a few days before. And even when it leaks, much like me, I was like, I don't care about the leak. I'm waiting for the full release, you know?
Mm.
And I think that speaks to the respect and the talent and the relationship that they have with their fan base.
I have to give them props, because they did a lot of the regular usual stuff, right? Which is like Tiny Desk, phenomenal, loved it. Performance on Jimmy Fallon, that they appeared on a lot of these different talk shows and interviews and whatever. And I mean, it worked. I mean, it worked. Like I said, I wasn't paying attention that much to clips, but like very quickly, I was like, wait, whoa, what? Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is fire. This is fire.
Mm. So
even when So Be It dropped, I got pumped. I was like, this is dope.
Yeah. The Halal version of So Be It is the best. We weren't too happy with that other version that they tried to sneak in there.
No, wasn't it like sample clearance problems?
Yeah, but the problem is people kept like, even I learned this when I used to run the African Hip Hop Blog, right? Sometimes when you figure out where the sample comes from, you get really excited, or you speak to the producer and the producer tells you, no, I chopped this up. And then you go speak to the artist and you tell them, yo, so-and-so, this sample from so-and-so, and they stop the interview and be like, dude, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Mm.
I haven't cleared the sample. Shut up.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened with the So Be It sample. Is too many people figured out the thing and they were making all these videos and like, this is how they sample the song. And they'd be like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
That's always going to happen, especially in this kind of music. The final thing that I kind of want to talk about on this clips thing is someone said there's no other genre where album sales or number of streams or whatever is used to try and determine how good of a project it was.
That's literally the basis of pop music.
Well, the basis of pop music is not a... I feel like that's a different thing because literally pop music is what's the most popular. So I like you can't include it in this conversation. But I mean, like, no one says that in EDM, for example. No one says that in Afrobeats in general. Jazz or rock or something. They may sales may be mentioned, but everyone clearly understands that sales does not have any direct correlation to the quality of an album or quality of the music.
I'm not trying to be combative.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, but I think it's a conflation of two separate things. It's one, we're dealing with the popification of hip-hop. Hip-hop has, especially in recent years, but I would say for much longer than we've realized, it's always been under-indexed. And when they started indexing hip-hop against all other genres, hip-hop kept trouncing them, which is why they kept changing the rules for on-demand streams versus free streams, because they realized that hip-hop was wiping the floor with rock music, even pop music, and other genres. So hip-hop has now become this incredibly popular genre. The more popular it becomes, the more of a commercial enterprise it becomes. And as a commercial enterprise, it's always pegged to sales.
Yeah.
And this obviously kicked off in the 2000s, particularly with 50 Cent and what he was doing. Because if you look at how 50 Cent was moving and how he's talking, 50 Cent was a precursor to how Drake speaks, particularly with commercial exploits. Right? So there's that. But in with regards to sales, it's a game of top trumps. So people always look for the easy, quick top trumps. And when you now have people who have no interest in the culture itself and don't know how to speak to the culture or to report on the culture, that the lowest hanging fruit when you want to start deriving conversation around the culture is numbers. Because anyone can go to the Billboard or BuzzAngle, will now Luminate, get the numbers and just regurgitate them. So-and-so did X amount. But they can't speak to anything else. I hate to bring it up, but he's a perfect example. Academics. Academics' main motif is always speaking about the numbers. He doesn't really speak about the culture. He speaks about street culture. He speaks about gossip. But he doesn't speak about the music itself, the culture, like the stories behind it, like what matters. So that, and obviously the success of Drake, who became this massive numbers machine, and it became a self-reinforcing cycle where he became so big, and then people justified and helped grow him and keep him relevant by referencing the numbers that made him big and kept him big and kept him growing. And he became this massive streaming monster because he was at the forefront of the streaming and he pioneered streaming to the masses. So he's always going to have the massive numbers. And because he seems to have fallen short in other regards in recent years, quality of music, not as great. Consistency of releases, not as great. The temperament of his character doesn't seem to be as great from what we've seen. All his fans have to hold on to is the numbers. So I wouldn't necessarily say we were the only genre that do. I think because we're tapped in, we see it. Because I see it happening with.
I love how you're saying we, but yeah.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like hip hop fans because I see it with the Barbs, for example. I see, but it's also when she's biting back at hip hop. I see it with Charlie XCX's fans or Lady Gaga's fans. That's why I say it's a pop thing because I've seen the debates. Under pop fandom, and now they're switching towards hip hop, where they're pop fans, K-pop fans, who are almost religious with how they look at the numbers and how they look to game the system and how they look to make sure that the artist comes out on top.
Mm. I mean, so I get that, right? But I mean, I'm talking more. So I'll tell you where this angle is coming from, right? It was more on. The usual debate that goes on the timeline about
Like, for example, I saw someone say, hey, you guys were clowning Lil Wayne for doing 100K, but the clips only did 90K first week or whatever the case is. Which,
what a stupid argument.
Anyone who obviously understands context will see how dumb of an argument that is. You know, if Kuda Rice's short film makes 50,000, that's a huge success, but you would not compare it to the $1 billion that comes in from the Avengers. Like, come on, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, there's context involved as to what is a success and what's not. And I used extremely, extremely disparate examples just to prove my point. But my point is, I think it is such a good thing that this very lyrical, rappety rap album without poppy club-ready singles did well commercially to the extent that it did.
And not only that, this is an independent release. It's only being distributed by Roc Nation. It's still an independent release.
Which is beautiful. I love that. I love that. So, hey, if you're a hip-hop head and you, for some reason, have not listened to Clips this week, please just search for it. In fact, all the songs are attributed to Clips, Pusha T, and Malice. So whichever one you search for, you'll find it. And I highly recommend. Great listen. Great listen.
So a bit of a deviation, but you brought up something that I found interesting.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about it recently. Is, you know, the dead internet theory, right?
Yeah.
So I can't remember who I first read or saw or spoke about this. But Cloudflare released a report and they said 50% of all internet traffic, not bandwidth necessarily, but traffic, is AI and bots.
Yeah. Mm.
Which means there's a high likelihood that 50% or more of discussions on social media are being generated by bots or LLMs. And with that in mind, I've now started to look at some of the conversations I'm seeing on social media. And I'm starting to feel like these actually might be bots. Because there's such an incredible number of rage-baity, horrendous takes. And some accounts, you'll see them multiple times a day, either posting or commenting. And I'm starting to believe that these are bots talking to each other. And somewhere along the line, as humans, we get caught in the crossfire to just give them real impressions so they can take their $20 or $30 from Elon, whatever it may be. But at the very least, it's part of the brain rot. Because if we've been seeing what, like the Nicki Minaj SZA battle, some of the takes Nicki Minaj is saying are not only nonsensical, they're concerning. But you'll see 30,000 people who seems, Queen, yeah, you gagged there, yeah. Oh, you gagged there. And you're like, are these 12-year-olds?
Actually, I had it on the list of things to talk about, but even just hearing you saying that has made me tired and made me realize I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. We can move on.
I mean, the dumbest thing ever. But what I can say is it's so crazy.
It's actually, it's weird. Huh? On one side,
I tried to look at how did this start.
About selling coke.
So it started when...
And then on the other side, you've got the other end of that value chain. You've got production to consumption.
It started with Punch of TDE promoting the song Broken Barbie by, I can't remember which artist, one of his TD artists.
Lyric, a new artist called Lyric.
Lyric. So his new song called Broken Barbie has nothing to do with Nicki Minaj. Then she put out some wild rant about music executives or whatever. Then SZA posted a very seemingly innocuous, I just saw no link to Nicki Minaj in any way, an innocuous post about Mercury being in retrograde or something like that. Don't take the bait. Mercury retrograde, blah, 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 blah. And then she absolutely lost it and started coming for everyone and insulting, calling SZA ugly, which is crazy, by the way. That's insane. That's how I know we can't take you seriously. Bought or not bought.
That's how I know you're consuming what Push is selling. That's what I know.
Bought or not bought, that face is not ugly. You can never call SZA ugly. Mm. This is all I'm saying. Then talking about her botched BBL from Nicki Minaj.
Nicki, we saw you in quadrants. We've seen it on stage.
to someone who arguably has the best advert for BBLs in the world. Anyway, that's a whole other story. Let's move on. I haven't listened to the new K-Chaps album. Didn't it just drop? It dropped today, right?
Yeah. I just wanted to speak about it. Yeah, man. Shout out to K-Chaps, man. Shout out to K-Chaps. I actually want to give it a listen, see what he's saying.
It's called Tarantino. Well, I haven't listened to it yet. I mean, I heard the singles that he pushed, but I haven't listened to the album yet. I look forward to listening to it. Big fan of K-Chaps. I will have a grand review for you all when I actually listen to it. I'll tell you what I did listen to in the past few weeks. That new Takura album, that Pariah and Pariah Deluxe. That man knows how to make music.
Cool. Is this under Shona Prince?
Under Shona Prince, yes.
Anyway, it's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, if you're wondering, my man's was forced to make himself a new name. Maybe he did it joyfully, I don't know. But predatory contracts are dangerous.
It's a jungle out there, Dan. It's a jungle.
It is. But I will tell you that Shona Prince Pariah Deluxe, hoo-hoo, I loved it. And it wasn't one of those. It wasn't like, support local. This is nice for a local. No. Like, I was vibing to that. It was a great album. Top marks. I actually really enjoyed Gemma's album as well. I went in there thinking, this is our friend, you know, have to support. It is what it is. But I was like, this is especially the holy. Yo, what a tune. Anyway, I highly recommend those two albums. The new Natty O song is dope. The video is dope as well. What's it called again?
Too much.
Natty O is a treasure, man. What a treasure. Although he was supposed to be part of this acoustic cafe thing that we were doing, and he was like, brother, you're shooting on the day after my birthday. I'm sure you know what that means. I was like, no, Natty, please can you go explain further? He's like, no, I'll catch you on the
next. He drinks Hennessy. You know what it means.
He was like, no, I'll catch you on the next one day. I was like, my guy.
Like, yeah. Let me see if I can get him a bottle of Hennessy.
Shout out to Natty O with his brand new song Too Much, doing really well on radio. His video just dropped and it's also doing pretty well. 1 day old, it's already hit 50,000 views. It's a big deal for Zim. Go check out that new Natty O. Shout out to Natty O, man. Big fan of Natty O.
Word up.
Okay, Phil, you want to talk about Lamine Yamal? What do you want to say, Phil?
I just found it. You're the football person, bro. I just found the Guan hilarious. I didn't even.
Okay, this is what I'll say. Earlier today, I was listening to the Black and Forth podcast and they talked about it. And I found it was a hilarious conversation because they were also like in real time discovering like, what is the story here? What I will say is when I saw the news, I did not understand. Like, Phil, should these strapping individuals not have an opportunity to work if they so choose to engage?
That was my question. Is like, yo, these people need to be employed somewhere, somehow.
If you are not being trafficked, if you're not being coerced, if you're not being subjected to dehumanizing environments, of which I don't know, maybe that's what was happening at Lamine Yamal's party. Do I think it's weird? I do think it's a little bit weird that 17-year-old turning 18-year-old Lamine Yamal invited.
Wait, that. Hold on. You think the teenage millionaire. Who's already been called the next Ronaldo.
Who's literally got one of the highest salaries in his team at 17, now 18. Anyway, I don't get it. And frankly, I also was like, I mean, should a man not be able to hire willing and eager participants? I mean,
what world are we living in? If we can't hire little people to be entertainment at our parties, what are we doing? What are we working so hard for?
Like, you know what? No, honestly, look, maybe people, maybe they have a point with this whole Trump thing. I'm just saying, because too woke is the world. Yeah. But okay, I don't know all the details. Maybe there's some concerning things.
The part that killed me is my man sent Peter Dinklage a comment and said, yo, my man, check GS.
So I'm trying to get Tyrion up in here.
that's wilding at another level, bro. I'm gonna get it. Yo, can you imagine like telling all his homies that are still in high school, by the way, guys, guess who's coming to my birthday? In full costume. And he's gonna give a soliloquy.
Bill, no, let's not talk about sex act. speaking of Game of Thrones, I just thought to quickly mention. So Timad Zika, who's an avid listener and commenter on this podcast, he posted on his Twitter, he said, what do you think is the most random thing to ever happen in Zimbabwe? And people are sharing some very random things that happened in Zim. One of the things someone shared, Mitchell, shares Game of Thrones star Sir Davos, was played by Liam Cunningham. He worked for Zesa in the 80s for 3 years. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, he's Zimbabwe. He went to PE.
Yeah, I remember us talking about him. Then I Googled it and I was like, I'd completely forgotten about this. Because I remember there was another, was it this character? It was a different character. But anyway, yeah, Liam Cunningham.
You mean George R. R. Martin when he came to Vic Falls?
No. There was another one, I think, who was in one episode or two episodes or something like that. We had a very minor scene. But
the black guy who was one of the smugglers.
Exactly. But Liam Cunningham, who plays Sir Davos in Game of Thrones, worked for Zesa in the 1980s. I thought that was fun. So then I actually went to see what other random stuff about Zim have people been talking about. And there is so much stuff. People were speaking about the time Michael Jackson came to Zim and he was being driven around by Phil Chiangwa.
I know that one.
There was a Brick and Lace performance in Mutare. Did you go to that one, Phil?
Actually did. Shout out to Bothi for bringing them to Mutare. We had a great time at the... They performed at a golf club, by the way.
That is so funny, man.
Yeah.
That is so funny. Yo.
Actually, let me pull up the photo. I think I still have the photos of that night. That was a great night, bro.
Some of the other super random stuff that people were speaking about, they mentioned the fake Mr. Bean from Pakistan. Did you know that in the James Bond film starring Roger Moore, one of the Bond girls was a Zimbabwean woman by the name of Kubi Chaza Indi? Kubi Indi is, she's not by profession an actor. She's a businesswoman, but she was in a couple of films from the 70s to the, I think just the 70s actually. And then, so she was in Live and Let Die. And she played one of the Bond girls. And right now she's in Zim as, she's the Secretary General of the Indigenous Business Women's Organization in Zim. I was like, that's so random. Like, what? We need more of this stuff. Like, that's crazy. She was literally, she's on the poster. So it's James Bond standing with two Bond girls and one of them is her.
Yeah, we are a powerful nation.
Did you know one of the co-founders of Tesla, Elon Musk's company, is a Zimbabwean by the name of Ian Wright?
Yes, that I do.
He lived in Marondera in the 70s fixing tractors. So a lot of his knowledge about fixing tractors is what he put into this Tesla thing.
And so that's a quick warning for you guys, especially when I see him, bro. Tesla's a tractor. Your Cybertruck is a tractor. It's a John Deere.
Then someone mentions the documentary about the aliens that visited Oriel School back in the 90s.
Did you see that thing about Sharon Stone beefing with Bobito?
No.
Oh, so Sharon Stone apparently was shooting movies in Zim because there were a bunch of South Africans that were laundering money through Zimbabwe through shooting films.
Yeah.
And then she was helping victims of GQ rebuild their homes and whatnot. And then she got called up to State House and our president was like, stop what you're doing. I don't like that.
Really?
And she was like, nah. In fact, let me find it.
That's insane. That is so funny.
Bring up your next clip while I look for this one.
Okay. Did you know that dinosaur remains were found in Mbire in 2022?
Yes. Shout out to my boy Nko. He's done a few documentaries about that.
So they were never found anywhere else, that specific species. So it was named Mbiresaurus.
Mm-hmm.
That is so
he's actually funny. He's got some great renders about that on his site. Check out Nafuna TV.
That's crazy. Mbiresaurus. That's so funny, here man.
Here we go. We've got Sharon Stone speaking to Louis Theroux. Here we go, Dan. Let me know if you can hear this.
I can hear it.
Or maybe he doesn't. Oh, and you also did two movies back to back in Zimbabwe, which you write about. Yeah, when I was a little kid, yeah.
This was in the 80s as well, in a kind of Indiana Jones. I mean, I took an interest in that because I did some teaching in Zimbabwe, and it's a beautiful country, as you well know.
When did you do that?
I did that in the 88, so a few years after.
So see, even Louis Theroux taught in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but they were in such a rough period at that time, still.
I mean, but it was going to get worse. Like the early 90s is when it really started to hit the buffers. Yes.
Right. It was in such a bad shape because there was just nothing. There was no food. There was no imports, no exports.
Really?
It was a freeze on everything. It was just awful. I had been taking up money and helping people who their corrugated metal buildings had been burned down if they didn't vote for who Mugabe wanted them to. And I was taking up collections to, you know, get them new places to live. And Mugabe called me into the presidential palace to tell me to knock it off.
Are you serious? You met Mugabe?
Oh, yeah. He was really furious with me for helping people survive. He called us in and told us to knock it off, and or we were going to be in a lot of trouble and going into the palace. It really was like the Eddie Murphy movie with all of the weird, you know, horns and furs and him and his little throne and yelling at me. And I was young enough that I just didn't really give what he thought. It was quite a situation.
What year were you living there?
84 and 85.
And were you based in Harare or out in
I was in Harare and Victoria Falls.
Wow. He probably quite liked the idea of a big budget Hollywood production taking place in Zimbabwe, right? That would have been, I would have thought.
Well, what was happening is the people that were making the show were laundering money out of South Africa for South Africans. So they were getting like a quarter on the dollar. And these shows were being made so that South Africans could get their money out, and money was going into a Swiss bank account. When the drought ended and there was so much rain that we couldn't work for a long time, they decided to make two movies, which is why we ended up being there for like a year and a half, so that they could really get that money out of there.
What I'd love to get to is a sense of how, and I know it's overly familiar to you, but how you went.
And there you go, Dan. That is Sharon Stone in Zimbabwe.
I really enjoyed this thread. It's just random stuff about Zim that, like, I feel like if we had a more robust TV space, you know, documentaries, shows, and whatever, like some of the stuff would be more well known. But I enjoyed reading and learning about some of this stuff. Here's another wild one. I knew this one already, but I thought I'll mention it again. The founder of Lyft, you know, competitor to Uber, his name's Robert Green. He had come to Zimbabwe to visit, and he used the combis. In fact, he used Mshika Shika.
Yep.
And that's what inspired him to create Lyft. In fact, when it was first started, it was called Zimride, then it was renamed to Lyft. So,
interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. There's a ton of other interesting stuff in there, but I think I'll just leave it at that.
Mm.
Oh, did you know Dr. Death conducted experiments in Zim? As in, what's his name? McGowan.
Who's Dr. Death? The name rings a bell. I'm trying to place.
So there was a famous doctor who killed a ton of people. Richard McGowan. So he killed like a ton of people in the UK, but he started his murder spree when he was in Zim, in Chitungwiza Hospital.
Oh wow.
The story is that he performed experiments with drugs and stuff and killed hundreds of people. Okay, I don't know how many, but he killed lots of people.
Hmm. Wow.
Anyway.
I think we discussed it on the podcast a few years ago, but you do remember there's that white Zimbabwean who's also like one of the biggest crypto scammers in the world.
Yes. I remember that as well.
Yeah.
We're
a powerful nation.
We are, you know, we make moves in the world. We make moves. Did you know that the Concorde during its promotional flights, one of its stops was Zimbabwe. Sort of show the world, hey, new flight. I think it was 1993. New plane that breaks the sound barrier. We're going to Zimbabwe. And everyone's like, why? Well, they came here.
Mm.
Very interesting stuff. Anyway.
So, Dan, I think now it's time to really get serious. You've been chomping at the bit, as they say. What do you think about the Epstein files? Let us know.
Hoax.
What is going on there, Dan?
Where are they? What Epstein? Epstein files, the hoax.
Okay, sorry, no. Denias. What do you think of the Epstein files, Denias? Definitely not Dan.
I think that I think when you air quotes complete life, you've got so much money you couldn't finish it if you tried. And you've got influence, power, and access to everything that you've ever wanted. I think that there are many people in that position who then have extremely weird tastes or desires or things that they want to pursue, especially if they're the type of person who stepped on people's heads to get to where they got. And I think that there are, it's not a conspiracy to expect that there are tons of super rich leaders of the world who engage in extremely disgusting behavior. And I think that any attempt to expose them will be very swiftly shut down. And that is what we are seeing in real time. I just think it's an extremely fumbling and like, are you telling me that it is so difficult to just simply create a fake Epstein list and it just randomly lists some of your enemies and people you don't like? Case closed.
Mm. You mean like creating a fake video and then people look at the metadata and they're like, wait a minute, this metadata was edited in Premiere.
Why would you go that route? Why would you even go that route? Sorry, there's no video. Why would you go that route? Sorry, there's no video. List coming out soon. What? Rosie O'Donnell is on the list? What? That's crazy.
You know, the wild thing is, remember the beginning, there was no video. And then they get double. Well, actually, all the cameras were done except this one.
I'm not generally a conspiracy theorist. I think that people enjoy creating fantasies. But I also know there's a ton of stuff that's being hidden from us. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. Think about the few things that we discover. What about all the things that are hidden by money? There's probably tons of stuff. Especially the most rich, like literally billionaires, the few thousand billionaires that exist. I shudder. Mm. To think what, to have that level of money that you could literally do, there's nothing to strive for. So how do you motivate yourself? How do you pass time? What do you do? A hobby? No, what do you need a hobby for?
I don't. So I don't know if you've heard the latest episode of Intelligent Machines. They've got Anil Dash. And if you remember, Anil Dash is a blogger. He was part of the team that started Lifehack and he's also been involved with a lot of venture capitalists in the IT space. So, and in his interview, he was saying the issue is not necessarily technology. The issue is itself the system we've created within capitalism only allows the most morally bereft individuals to succeed. And he gives examples. He says, like, yo, I've worked with tens, and I mean tens, of tech founders who are billionaires now. I cannot name one of them who is still married to the same woman they were with when they started, when they become billionaires. And he's like, I think that part of it is being a billionaire is a very conscious decision. And it's a conscious decision you make every day where nothing else matters except me accumulating as much wealth as possible. So people, relationships, moral consequences be damned, I'm trying to get to $1 billion. And these people are motivated by getting to $1 billion because the quality of life between someone with 600 million versus someone with 1.2 billion is almost negligible. And he's like, my kids go to the same school as these people. My kids have the same toys as them. Yes, my kids might not be in a yacht as big, but really, if I wanted to, I could just get on their yacht. Because why do I need a yacht 365 days out of the year, right? So the quality of life between someone with $1 billion versus someone with 100 million is negligible, right? But these guys just chase the number. And I say all that to say, these people are motivated by the number, right? It's almost like that movie we spoke about a few weeks ago, Mountainhead, where the difference between someone with 1 billion and 100 billion, it's a massive difference in terms of wealth. But in terms of what you can do with that wealth, it's really not that big.
But these guys are just so egomaniacal that they do these things. And now I say all that to bring it back to what you're talking about. I don't think it's necessarily about boredom. I think it's about the money allows you to explore your intrusive thoughts without consequence.
Mm. Or even your worst inclinations.
Yeah. And the more you, and the thing like with human nature, right? Our intrusive thoughts are called intrusive thoughts because they intrude for a short period of time and then we wipe them away because we're like, yo, that's disgusting. No, I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. You know what I mean? But when you're building it, you like to first thing, you're like, actually, you know what? You know what? Who, if I do this, who's going to stop me? Let me give it a try. Let's see. And then that works. And then now it now escalates. Like, okay, I've done this. Let me do the next thing. Let me do the next thing. And before you know it, as Dennis says, you're finding these weird masochistic or depraved ways to have your needs met or scratch an itch or exercise power, etc. And some of these people are the nerds who never got any play in high school. So they're taking out all their fantasies and all the weird ish that has gone wrong in their life on these people because now they have power over them. So all that to say, I am not suicidal. Well, I kind of am, but you know, I will not be hanging myself. I don't think Dan, you'll be hanging yourself. Just letting you guys know, just in case. Depending on what time or which day this episode drops, we're not sure if Ghislaine might decide to hang herself, even though there's no evidence against her. You know, it could be a weird thing, because that's the crazy thing and the hilarious thing about all this. If there were no Epstein files and there's no evidence against Epstein, why would a rich man kill himself when he was going to beat the case?
Phil, there's no debate here, Phil. It's pretty obvious what's going on. There's no like, guys, what do you think? I mean, come on.
Yo, the rabbit hole gets deep, bruh. The rabbit hole gets deep. When you look at who Ghislaine Maxwell's dad was, and who was involved in and who attended his funeral? Whoo, the rabbit hole gets deep. I'm not going to say anything on the podcast here, but just Google it, guys. If you want to do some reading, just Google who attended Ghislaine Maxwell's father's funeral.
Yeah. Anyway, I think, Phil, let's take advantage of this opportunity to wrap it up.
I actually wanted one thing. Sorry, one quick segue. It'll be a quick one. I think since we're on this topic, so Sandman season 2 dropped. I wasn't really familiar with Sandman season 1, so I watched a bit of it, and it was actually a decent show. It's a bit dark, but it's a decent show, an enjoyable watch. And then I remember that Neil Gaiman was involved in a bit of a sex scandal, and I'll summarize it here.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman grew up to a family that were raised in the Scientology church. So, not great already. Firstly, there was a podcast series that dropped, and then there was an article in The New Yorker, and then there was another article in Vulture. So, in the common thread in the podcast and these articles, there was one woman who says that she used to babysit Neil Gaiman's children. First, she was like a family friend, and then she was dirty, down on the luck, about to be homeless, young woman. She was in her 20s, Neil Gaiman was in his 50s or 60s, I believe. And on her first day, Neil Gaiman, keep in mind, this is someone who needs a job, is about to be homeless. Neil Gaiman invites her to their estate and says, yo, go take a bath in the outside bathtub. So she's like, okay, weird, but takes a bath. While she's there questioning her msana and whatnot, Neil Gaiman pitches to the bathtub naked. And then encourages her to have the sexual relation. At the time, she didn't see anything too untoward. She felt a little weird about it, but she didn't feel too untoward about it. But then this would continue to the point where Neil Gaiman was even having relations with her while his son was in the room. And his son was like a 2, 3, 4-year-old while this was going on. Eventually, this girl gets the courage to go tell Neil Gaiman's wife, because he's married at the time. The wife says, you're the 14th woman to come to me with this. But does that lead her to leave him? Nope. Continues. So much so, there were so many victims of this. The other thing is Neil Gaiman was involved in BDSM with these people. But one of the main things about BDSM is there has to be consent and there has to be a safe word. They say that whenever they'd use the safe word, he would not stop. He would continue to do whatever he was doing. Well, obviously, for the purposes of this podcast, we won't get into detail. But he would also insist that these women would call him master and he would call them slave, which is part of the BDSM dynamic. He would do it so often that even the child, this is with the babysitter who now became the au pair, would insist that she also called him master. This is the son saying, you call my dad master, you call me master too. So the accusations were damning.
So
initially, question game and try to ignore them.
Are you good? Are you going to watch Sandman?
Let me get to it.
Okay.
So initially, Neil Gaiman tried to deny these rumors until he couldn't. And then he then said that, but all these sexual relations were consenting. And then his wife filed for divorce. And as a result of this, I believe, obviously American Gods was not coming back, but there was a show on Amazon Prime that they've halted production on. There was another show that was about to be purchased. And then Netflix has canceled season 3 of Sandman. So season 2, which was already shot before these accusations came out, part 1 dropped last week. Part 2 is dropping next week. But we don't know what's going to happen. I think they've said that season 3 is not happening anymore. And it's brought up this conversation again of trying to separate the artist from the art. Do you try to separate the artist from the art? Do you judge the artist for their art or rather their actions and in their art? And what do you do? Especially in a situation like this where Neil Gaiman was able to do this. Oh, the other thing is he used to do this with fans as well. Like he'd go to these book tours and whatnot and abuse fans. Neil Gaiman was able to do these things because he was incredibly loved and popular, especially someone who posited himself as a feminist, as an ally, and used his position to con these poor women. My question is, as people's views around Me Too evolve and we have a better understanding of how best to boycott, how not to boycott, how to hold people accountable, etc. In a situation where one writer is responsible for so many people's livelihoods, in like with all these shows, you've got multiple actors, multiple directors, multiple producers, multiple crew members, makeup artists, special effects, etc. etc. Like Neil Gaiman is probably responsible for hundreds of jobs. Is it fair to cancel their art after it's been released because of they're horrible people and you don't enrich them? Or are there better ways to approach the topic?
My position on this has always been the same. I've always felt that to me, all celebrities are trash. That's obviously a very sweeping statement. That's not 100% true. But that's how I approach the world. If you are famous and are a celebrity, chances are very high that you are at the very least self-centered. But more than that, maybe you're obnoxious, rude, or even worse than that, maybe you're a full-on criminal or a terrible person. So I have somewhat accepted that the best art is going to come from the most flawed people. And I am really... There are two separate conversations. The art that I'm consuming and the artist's consequences and the things that they must face and all of that. In my opinion, Neil Gaiman must, you know, face the repercussions of his depravity and the things that he's done. He must spend time in jail. All of that is true. In my opinion, the art that he made is still art that can be consumed. I also understand if someone says, I find it very difficult as I'm listening to this R. Kelly song, I can't help but think of the things that he was accused of doing. Completely understand. Or someone who's watching Sandman and says, yo, but I know that this is based on a book that was, I feel like that's a bit of a further jump, but maybe for some people that's how they feel. But in my opinion, wait till you find out what the people who made a ton of your other favorite things also did. It is what it is, as far as I see it. Should they face consequences and should they face accountability for the things they've done? Absolutely. Should I boycott their art? I mean, that's an individual decision for everyone, but to me, it doesn't make it. I don't see the value of boycotting the art of someone who's facing the consequences or facing whatever. If someone is in jail for the thing that they've done, we as a society have as a whole, individually, we may not agree, but as a whole society, we've agreed that this is the justice system. This is the thing that you're supposed to do. The justice system is then going to go through or hear what you've done, give you the commensurate punishment. That commensurate punishment never includes, and no one will ever listen to your music ever again. In my opinion, you're not punishing the artist. You're punishing yourself. You're stopping yourself from listening to music or watching a movie or reading a book or whatever the case is, from something that you might enjoy because the person who did it is a terrible person. I can also understand how some people may say, listen, the justice system has failed us, or we feel like it was not harsh enough. I will not be giving my money, or I will not be showing support. But I don't necessarily view art as that. I'm paying not to support the artist. I'm paying because I want to consume your art. In some cases, I do it for support, yes. So for example, when I pressed play on Gemma's album, it was because I want to support someone who I consider a friend. But then I also enjoy the album and I listen to the album. So I feel like I listen to music because I want to listen to it, not because I'm choosing to support the artist. Other people feel differently and they view art slightly differently, and they pay because they want to support, not necessarily because they enjoy or they like or they're doing it for their own reasons. Completely understand. But for me, I am enjoying this art. I am paying very little to no attention as to what the state of the person it is who made the art, unless it is relevant to the consumption of the art. So this, you know, this artist was in this place, you know, Malice was just coming from this period of, you know, only making Christian music for a while, but before that he made no music, and then now he's come back, and it actually lends weight to the words of him talking about some of his father's last words being, use your mess to make a message. You know what I mean? Me understanding the context of the artist helps me understand that line better, and it makes it deeper and more meaningful. And I think the same is true. Kanye West was going through this weird depression that had hit him because of, you know, this whole crazy thing that he did with Taylor Swift at the Grammys. So then he went, he was ostracized from society, and then he went and made My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. That context gives extra meaning to the songs or to the words that are used. But Kanye West is a terrible person. Yeah, that's also true. But I still listen to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, and I don't think of him as a terrible person. I just think of the music I'm listening to.
Yeah, Dan goes defending his Nazi again. Ugh.
So I just didn't watch Sandman because, you know, it's too many things to watch, and it didn't grab me like that.
It's actually really good.
So, yeah. So ultimately, I understand if someone chooses to boycott an artist. I just don't understand why you would want to make someone else or shame someone else for enjoying. It's the same with the whole Chris Brown thing. You know, Chris Brown had this huge concert series that he was going to, and everyone was saying, oh, I'm better than you because you went to Chris Brown. I mean, I get into that jokingly, but in reality, if you are going to enjoy, I think it's a bit different maybe going to a live show, because it feels like you're low-key interacting with the energy of the person. So it's like going to a Neil Gaiman book signing is different to reading his book. Do you know what I mean? Reading J.K. Rowling's books is different to going to her event to receive an autograph. To me, those are kind of different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but ultimately, for me, consuming art is completely different to endorsing or supporting an artist.
Yeah, I get that. I do think the reason why I'm trying to have this conversation, it's not necessarily for content. Obviously, we are producing content, but it's more so to try actually have a conversation that moves, or at least attempts to move forward, because I definitely do agree. If someone's done reprehensible things, there should be consequences. If there's no legal consequences, then there has to be some sort of social...
societal, yeah.
Or ostracization, punishment, whatever that may be. That is true. But in certain instances, some of these people are bigger than themselves. So what happens to everyone else who just applied for the wrong job, almost? You know what I mean?
I'll be honest with you. I don't even consider that, because I'm not buying this album because I'm thinking that the graphic designer who worked for this artist deserves to also have a job. I'm buying it because I want to hear the music.
I'm not spreading it out to art in general. So that's one side of it. The other side of it is, what does consuming this person's art say about us as a culture? And I do think these are conversations we do need to have, but
we need to figure out a way to have them uniformly, because Walt Disney wasn't a great person, but every single one of our of kids who have any decent exposure to Western media will quote one of his company's films with glee in their heart. You know what I mean? But he wasn't the best of people. And not just speaking about artists, now let's speak about the people that run the companies that are more integral to our life. Because art is one thing, but it's not really a necessity. Some might argue it is, but let's just say the people that make the food, the cars we drive, you know? Pusha T was joking about people driving Audis. There's a lot of German automakers with sordid histories about who they supplied their vehicles with around the middle of last century, for example. Like, how do we hold all these people accountable, and what's the statute of limitations? I genuinely don't know. So it was something I was thinking of in the back of my mind while I watched this. I'm watching the show. It's decent, but that man did some weird things, and I don't want to support him.
I will reiterate. What do you estimate, Phil, of the entire library on Netflix? The makers, lead actors, directors, or producers, or writers of all those shows and movies, what percentage of them do you think contain someone degenerate? I would wager
100.
100%. That's what I would say. Whether it's the director, producer, lead actor, whatever it is. We know about some of them. If you were to research, you'd find out about others. Some of them we just don't know. They are known knowns and known unknowns. Obviously, when you get new information, it should affect how you act. So I'm not trying to say that, you shouldn't do anything or don't care. No, of course, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is, if you're going to go down this road or you're going to pull on that thread, it's going to be very difficult to navigate life. The way I see it, I consume art. I'm not going to show public support for Diddy. No ways. But am I going to listen to some of his classic joints? Yeah. I'm not going to be out there promoting or saying you guys need to listen to Diddy, but yeah, absolutely.
I don't trust your nipples anymore. Suspicious.
Am I going to sing loudly along to More Money, More Problems? Yes. Am I removing it from my playlist because of the nonsense that he's been up to? No.
Well, there is now a Diddy-less version of More Money, More.
See, that's crazy to me because I want to hear that Diddy verse, even though it's not great, but it's not a great verse. But
those
it's
are words that were not uttered by anyone, even before this controversy. No one has ever been, you know what I want to hear? I want to hear the Diddy verse.
That's
we
true.
We tolerate the Diddy verses. We don't want to hear them.
But when you hear the song, the full experience, it doesn't sound the same. As much as it wasn't a great verse. You know what I'm saying?
I get you. I think we're good to wrap up. We wanted to talk about this great story, but I think we'll save it for tomorrow. Maybe we'll do it with the patrons.
I don't even know these people. Who are these people?
I just wanted to discuss it because Tiffany gave us a 10-page summary. She gave us such a detailed summary of the Guan.
Shout out to, you know what? Our patrons can read it. I don't know who these people are. Are they public figures of some kind? Or
yes, she's a wild. She's a public figure. She's got like 2 million followers on TikTok, 500,000 on Instagram. She's an influencer. Yeah. Do you know the summary of the Guan?
I mean, I read the summary, but it was very difficult to put in context because I don't know who these people are. But anyway, let's leave it. We'll leave it for the group.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next week. And then, funny enough, I came across a new song by Anatoria. She's doing really well, and it's a banger. So I'm going to recommend that for this week.
She's in the country right now, obviously.
Eh? Oh, nice. Is she doing the concert?
I think so. I don't know.
She's got a song called In the Middle with Imran. Let me just play a little bit of it.
Isn't it? Isn't there like a big gospel concert this weekend or something? No, don't play it, Phil. We're going to get taken down.
She's independent. And it goes on like so. It's a banger.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, she's performing at this Travis Green thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's happening tomorrow, actually.
Let's go.
Yeah, no thanks. I wonder, do they serve drinks? Anyway, look, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in to another episode of Two Broke Twimbles. We'll take advantage of this opportunity to close it down. We back. Sorry for missing last week. Please continue to support the podcast. If you've been, if you are here because of finding us on the Feeling Station, welcome. Please drop a like, a subscription, drop a comment, a 5-star rating if you can. We'd be very happy to hear some of your thoughts about some of the random things that have happened in Zim. I thought that was an interesting list. Maybe you know some other things that we could include in future discussions. If you want to become a Patreon subscriber where we have regular conversations, even when we are missing on the podcast, twobroketwimbles.com/donate. For as little as $5 a month, we add you to the group. We have great discussions. Just today, we were hearing some non-spoiler reviews of the new Superman movie. Very excited.
When are we going to watch it?
Where are we going to watch it? Is the new Westgate Cinema open? The new Metro thing.
No, it's not new Metro. I'll tell you what's going on offline. But yeah, there's a cinema at Westgate.
And it's showing it, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
All right, let's go. It's far to drive, but yeah, I'm willing. I'm willing because I'm very keen to. Maybe
the other option is Joiner.
Okay, you know what? I'm down. I'll actually go to Joiner. I know, but for soups, I'll do it for soups.
Okay, we'll talk off.
All right, twobroketwimbles.com/donate. We'll add you to the group if you so choose. We'll also try and give you some other benefits where we can, but the real benefit is just knowing that you're supporting your favorite podcast. I think on this note, we're going to wrap it up and we will catch you in the next one.
We out.